Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
It would be an easy thing to transpose a zero. And so most commentators think that that's what was going on, that somebody made a mistake someplace, and then it just got sealed in the book and it got passed on down the road. Okay. Let me give you a couple other options. Okay. So this is from Steve putting his head into the game here. I am a general and I have 1,000 chariots. Okay. So do I only have 2,000 horses for those chariots? Or do I have more? Right. And I have guys who are going to ride in those chariots. And the guys who are going to ride in those chariots, there's going to be at least two, because in those chariots, you had a guy who ran the horses and you had another guy who was shooting a bow or throwing spears. So there's at least two in those chariots, depending upon the size, and we don't know what the size is. The horses for the chariots, there's going to be at least two horses per chariot, and sometimes they were four, and sometimes they were 6 to 8 horses for each chariot. So I have a horse get shot. Am I just going to leave the chariot sit there in the mud, or am I going to have more horses? Okay. And if I have a charioteer get shot, chariots are like tanks. And back then, you didn't blow them up. You killed the horses and you killed the men. And so if I have a chariot and the men in my chariot get killed and maybe their horses get killed, am I going to have reserves for that? Right. And so when you go through and you look at what the Bible says about these things, it looks like they had 10 horsemen for every chariot. And that would be a reasonable thing. In fact, the number, the men, the 20,000 foot soldiers, that number doesn't change. It's the 7,000 versus the 700 that changes in the passage. And so this is another one of those things. When I have chariot guys, are these going to be guys who only know how to ride chariots? I'm a general. So am I just going to train guys that only ride chariots? And that's all they do. What if their chariot busts? Okay, they're just going to sit in the chariot? Right. And so this is what we do with our military. So, for example, in the United States Marine Corps, every Marine, whether they are going to be pushing paper, or whether they're going to be cooking in a kitchen, or whether they're going to be in a medical facility, every single Marine is a rifleman. They're all trained as infantry. And so you would have a whole group of guys that are trained as infantry, and then you are going to have guys who get into the Bradley fighting vehicles, and if the vehicle gets shot out from under them, they're going to grab their rifles and go out and become an infantryman. Is what's going to happen. And most likely, that's what's going on there. They probably had 10 guys who were designated to each chariot. There's a good chance that that's what's happening in the passage. And so in one passage, you're talking about enough guys for 700 chariots. And then in the other passage, it's talking about all the men who were trained charioteers is most likely what's going on. And you can see that over in chapter 19 and verse 18. If you look in that passage, it says, "Then the Syrians fled before Israel, and David killed 7,000 charioteers and 40,000 foot soldiers of the Syrians, and killed Shophak, the commander of the army." When you go back to 2 Samuel, it talks about, let me find where the passage is. 2 Samuel 21. Why don't you turn back there real quick? So over in 2 Samuel 10:18, look at the passage here. Okay, so in chapter 19, verse 20, it says, the Syrians fled before Israel. David killed 7,000 charioteers and 40,000 foot soldiers of the Syrians and killed Shophak, the commander of the army. And in verse 18, it says, then the Syrians fled before Israel, and David killed 700 charioteers and 40,000 horsemen of the Syrians and struck Shophak, the commander of their army. That, when you have... That's been conformed to each other, and it's not doing what I want it to. It's not quite the right translation, basically. So you have, it does say 700 charioteers. I thought it was saying 7,000. So you have 700 charioteers in verse 18 of chapter 10, and you have 7,000 over in verse 18 of chapter 19. And again, what you have is a situation, most likely, where you have 10 men that are designated as being charioteers. They're the reserve. And that reserve is not a group of guys that are separate from the 40,000. In fact, most likely what's happening there is there's just a total of 40,000 guys, and 7,000 of them are reserves for the chariots, 700 chariots being there. And in fact, in this passage, when it says 700 charioteers, it literally in Hebrew says men of 700 chariots. It doesn't say 700 charioteers. It says the men of 700 chariots in Hebrew. And so if you got 10 men reserved for 700 chariots, that's 7,000 men. And so in that instance, both passages would say exactly the same thing, just from a slightly different perspective, for a slightly different wording. So you get that? Okay, so I don't know that that's what's going on. But what I just did with you was I went through a reasonable explanation of what a general back in those days would be doing with his men. And for sure, I can tell you absolutely for sure that this guy did not have 700 guys who could ride a chariot and that's all. He did not have that. He had a whole group of guys who could take over if one of the charioteers got killed. And so that's most likely what you're talking about. Is that good? Is that more than you ever wanted to know? I run into these things all, you know, it's one of these things that you run all into all the time. When you're going through Chronicles, you run into number issues, and you don't have to freak out about the whole thing. All you got to do is sit down and check things out and see if there's not a good answer. I've got a quote from, you know, just so you know that I didn't just make that up all on my own. I got a quote from Dr. Peter Ruckman, and he says this. On page 178 of his book, Problem Texts, that most of today's scholars, he puts it in quotes, say the number of 700 in 1 Samuel 8:4 is a scribal error. Then he asks if it never occurred to these men that professional soldiers might not be as stupid as Bible scholars. And he continues, why wouldn't a war chariot have spare horses? What if both of them, or 4 to 6 in a harness, were killed? What do you do, silly? Leave the chariot lying there in the mud? Obviously, the Syrians have 10 horsemen per chariot. Observe exactly the same thing comparing 2 Samuel 10:18 and 1 Chronicles 19:18, 10 men per chariot. And so that's one option. Another option is that, again, what you're talking about is actually another option would be that when the battle started, there's 7,000 charioteers. And by the time that the battle ended, there's only 700. And the 6,300 charioteers have been taken out of the battle. They've become footmen now. And so one may be chronicling of what was taking place at the beginning of the battle where they're looking across and counting and they're seeing 7,000 chariots and charioteers or whatever. And the other one is what's left over after the battle is done and what David's dealing with. And so there's a number of ways that you can reconcile those two numbers, and it doesn't have to be a problem with the transmission. But even if it was a problem with the transmission, it's pretty amazing that nobody messed with that, isn't it? You have a number of places in the Old Testament where the Jews refused to change it, even though there was an issue. They refused to change it, which lets you know that they were doing their best to be faithful to the text. It's a good proof of that. Okay, and so again, you have David winning, David going through and winning in these with these guys. And again, in verse 8, it says that David brought a large amount of bronze with which Solomon made the bronze sea, the pillars, and the articles of bronze. And then when he defeated Hadadezer, then two gave him again a large amount of articles of gold and silver and bronze. And so not only is God giving David favor wherever he goes, but God is beginning to give David the ability to build the temple, even though he's not going to be the one doing it. David is specifically, in every one of his victories, he's taking the spoils and he's setting those things aside for his son, who's going to end up building the temple. He doesn't even know who the son is yet, but he's already setting it aside so that his son can build the temple. And you know, that's one of those things that we need to keep in mind. Remember last week we were talking about when God tells you no, you don't need to pout about it, that maybe God wants to use you in another area. And that's what God's doing with David. But again, it's something that we need to keep in mind. Not everybody is called to be a pastor, and not everybody is called to be a missionary, and you know, not everybody's called to have children. These are things that I've looked at in my own life. Not everybody's called to be a worship leader. But if you're not called to be a pastor, if I wasn't called to be a pastor, you know what I'd be doing? I'd be supporting the ministry that I was under. That's what I did before I was a pastor. And so until I was called to be a pastor, Greg Laurie was my pastor, and I gave faithfully at that church because cool things were going on there. And so I couldn't be a pastor, but I can still be part of the ministry. And it's been the same thing with missionaries. You know, it's like I'm not called to go all over the world and do missions. I go off on trips every once in a while, but I'm called here. And so when I look at that, I don't get bugged about the whole thing. What I do is I just do my best to support missionaries. So I may not be a missionary, but I can certainly support missions. And when we first got married, we didn't have children. And we were having problems with that whole thing. We went and got checked out, and they were saying that, you know, there were some issues and that we needed to do some things and that kind of stuff. And we went as far as we wanted to go with that whole thing, and then we just trusted God. And one of the things that was cool about that period of time, we didn't have kids for 13 years. And one of the things that was cool about that period of time, it was instead of whining and being all bummed out about the fact that I couldn't be a dad, I could be the best uncle ever. Yeah, and so I have nieces and nephews that have memories that are lasting. Actually, with my nieces and nephews, I did this thing called the Mitchell Sandwich, and so it was Kyle Mitchell and Courtney Mitchell. Courtney actually goes to our church here; she's my niece, and then Kelly Mitchell. And so what I would do is I would do a Mitchell sandwich. And what that meant was I grabbed all three of them and I got them on the floor and I wrestled with them and I would put mustard on them, not for real, but I'm tickling them and I'm putting mustard on them and stuff like that. Then I grab another one, I slap them on top and then I put mustard and mayonnaise on top and maybe some ketchup and throw some pickles in and stuff like that. And they're all screaming while I'm doing it. And then I get the last one and, you know, and they're trying to pretend like they don't want to come over, but they get within arm's reach and I take them and I put them all there and then they're in the Mitchell sandwich and then I eat it. You know, and getting them and stuff. And so they loved it the whole time that they were growing up. I did it with them all the time. And so now I go down to Southern California and now they have children. And guess what the children want? And it was because the parents set the whole thing up. And so now I'm the greatest great uncle ever because I do Mitchell Duval sandwiches now, you know, and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I can't be a dad, but I can be the greatest uncle ever. My wife can't be a mom, but she can be the greatest aunt ever. And you know what you do is you allow God, even when God says no to a certain situation, it doesn't mean that you can't be involved or that you can't replace that. One of the things that God told me during the time that we weren't having kids is that the people that I was ministering to were going to be like my family. And I've always treated it like that. And so I have people that I've ministered to over the years that are literally like my family. And kids that I've raised in the Lord, and they're not part of my blood. but they think that I'm like their dad and that kind of thing. And so, you know, God can use you in different areas. And so if God says no to you, don't pout about it. Look at what God wants to do instead. And look at what you can get involved in. I mean, you may not be able to do the thing that you wanted to do for the Lord, but you can certainly be involved in it, in supporting it. And that's exactly what David did. And I like his attitude there. He goes on and says, verse 12, moreover, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, killed 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. That's talking about down near the Dead Sea. He also put garrisons in Edom, and all the Edomites became David's servants. And the Lord preserved David wherever he went. You see that back in verse 6? David put garrisons in Syria of Damascus. Syrians became David's servants and brought tribute. So the Lord preserved David wherever he went. And again, it's the idea of God being behind him and God taking care of him and God putting David in a place where he wins, where he wins. I was just having a talk with somebody that I know this afternoon. I'm not going to tell you who they were, but we were talking about winning again as a Christian. And I was talking about the fact that your life can be something that's absolutely different and it can be something that's absolutely cool if you'll just submit yourself to the Lord. And my life is a great example of that. I can't remember what it was at, but I showed a video not too long ago. You seen that video where they were trying to illustrate white privilege? You know what I'm talking about? And so they're all lined up on a line and they're going to race for about 50 yards for a $100 bill. And before the race starts, the guy who's got the $100 bill says, there's some things I'm going to say before we do this. And so everybody who had a two-parent household, take two steps forward. Everybody who had a father in the household the whole time that you were growing up, take another two steps forward. Everybody who was able to go to a private school, take two steps forward. And everybody who is in college, not because of a scholarship or because of a sports scholarship, but because somebody's paying for it for you, take two steps forward. Gives a whole list of things that it looks like he believed that white people were given. And then he makes them all stop and they turn around and look back. And there's a few white guys and white girls sitting back on the starting line, but mostly it's black guys and a few Hispanic guys. And he starts talking about how all these people out front are privileged. And then all these other people are people that are in a bad situation. And basically what he's doing is he's trying to guilt the people who are out in front. Well, you know the people who are out in front? That's my son. That's my daughter. That, you know, it's like my son right now is going to school. I'm paying for it. I'm paying for where he's living. And he got to go to a private school. And, you know, and I've been in the house the whole time that he's been around. So is his mom, that kind of stuff. And so he's one of the guys who's all the way out front. And so he's Mr. Privilege. And guess where I would have been in that whole story? On the line with the black guys. I would have been back on the line. That's exactly where I would have been. I got a little bit mad about that whole video because it was designed to make guys like my son feel guilty. My son shouldn't feel guilty. He should feel blessed. Actually, he shouldn't feel blessed at all. That's just normal family. That's how a normal family goes. You have two parents in the household. They grow up. They're more concerned about their children than they are themselves. They want to bless their kids and they want to make sure that they have a good life. That's what parents are supposed to do. And I don't feel guilty for doing it. But the other thing that I was really blessed by was by the fact that you can have that group of guys who are sitting on the starting line, and in one generation, it all changes. In one generation, it can all turn around. Again, when you're looking at what the Lord does for us, it's just a matter of going, okay, Jesus, I just want to do the things that you want me to do. I want to be in the place where you want me to be. And I'm, you know, even if I don't feel like it, I'm going to do the right thing in this situation. And what will happen is your life will get so much different than it ever was before. I'm not back on the starting line anymore. I grew up on the starting line, but I'm not back on the starting line anymore. And it's not because of my great work. It's because of Jesus in my life. And I just kind of went, okay, Lord, what do you want? Let's do that. And because I went, okay, Lord, what do you want? Let's do that. I've got this whole life that normally wouldn't be there. And this person that I was talking to, that's what I was talking to him about. saying, this is the life that God's called you to. This is what he's got for you. And this is all it takes. This is all you've got to do. And you're going to be making choices, and they're going to either be for the Lord or against the Lord. And if you're dumb, you go against him. And if you're smart like me, I'm really smart, you go with him. You go with him. I haven't always been really smart, but I'm really smart now. Some of that's experience, right? You see what I mean? Life is supposed to be good. And so God preserves him wherever he goes. And it goes on and says, so David reigned, verse 14, over all Israel and administered judgment and justice to all his people. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Abimelech, the son of Abiathar, were the priests. Shavsha was the scribe. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and the Pelethites. And David's sons were chief ministers at the king's side. Doesn't tell about all the mess that was in David's family, but this is the family as it was supposed to be. David's sons being chief ministers at the king's side. Then you have chapter 19. It says, it happened after this, that Nahash, the king of the people of Ammon, died, and his son reigned in his place. Then David said, I will show kindness to Hanan, the son of Nahash, because his father showed kindness to me. Now, we don't know what the kindness was. We don't know what Nahash did. We know that David was on the run from Saul for a period of time, and so it may have been the kind of thing where Nahash gave him a place to stay, or Nahash supplied food for him and his men, something like that. But on some level, Nahash did some kind things to him. Nahash, by the way, is the guy who came up against the Gibeonites and said, I'm going to wipe you out. They said, what can we do to keep from being wiped out? He said, you can cut out your right eye. That was Nahash. And we don't know if it's exactly the same name, because it could have been kings would take what were called reignal titles. And so it may have been a name for a king in the Ammonite kingdom. But if it's the same guy, Saul went up against him and whooped him up, drove him back to Ammon, and did some cool things there. And it was one of Saul's great battles. And it looks like Nahash later on got a heart that was a little bit different, especially in dealing with David. In any case, Nahash did something good for David, whether it was the original guy or whether it was his son, he did something good for David. And so David wants to repay. David's a guy who doesn't just take a kindness lightly. He wants to respond in kindness. So David sent messengers to comfort him concerning his father. And David's servants came to Hanan in the land of the people of Ammon to comfort him. And the princes of the people of Ammon said to Hanan, do you think that David really honors your father because he has sent comforters to you? Did his servants not come to you to search and to overthrow and to spy out the land? Therefore, Hanan took David's servants, shaved them, cut off their garments in the middle at their buttocks, and sent them away. So he'd take their robes, cut them this high, so that they're, and I don't know if they did a little jog thing so that the front was covered, but the back was open. That might be even more humiliating. But in any case, they're walking around with their bottoms showing, and he sends them away. Then some went and told David about the men, and he sent to meet them because the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, wait at Jericho until your beards have grown, and then return. When the people of Ammon saw that they had made themselves repulsive to David, Hanan and the people of Ammon sent 1,000 talents of silver to hire for themselves chariots and horsemen from Mesopotamia, from Syria and Maacah, and from Zobah. So they hired for themselves 32,000 chariots.
You've been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday service times are 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. We also meet on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today and will join us again next time on Crosswalk.